At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job, or your deodorant, or your lunch, or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, September 4th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hiya.
All right, BJ, what have you been doing recently?
Okay, so recently I'm doing a little bit of redecorating. I'm getting a little stir crazy. And I have very limited wall space at this point because I am also an avid collector of alternative movie poster art. So all of like the main wall space in my apartment is well spoken for. But I've got all these like little spaces that I've been trying to fill. And because my wife is smarter than I will ever be, she was like, oh, well, like record sleeves are about the same size. So we could use those. Or instead of wasting a record sleeve, which we need because we actually listen to records, laser discs are a very similar size. So we are currently working on filling the empty space in our apartment with framing up laser discs. Right now, our big project is collecting a bunch of John Woo laser discs.
Wow. Okay. So how has that project been going? Because that sounds like an incredibly niche thing. Are you able to find the things you're looking for?
So you would be surprised how easy it is to find these because nobody is like watching Laserdiscs. So they're just kind of hoarding them. So we have found a bunch of them and we decided we really wanted to focus on like Men in Suits era John Woo so that there's some sort of like cohesion going on. So we've got like The Killer and Face Off and Hard Boiled, A Better Tomorrow, like a lot of these really great ones. The problem that we have run into, though, is that a couple of these laser discs are technically Criterion releases, which they are like three folds deep, so they don't fit in the normal frames. So we need to like shadow box them. We have to, you know, figure something out with that. But yeah, we technically own like John Woo's Criterion movies now because they're on Laserdisc.
That's a pretty awesome idea. I remember when I was in college, my roommate and I, we lived in a dorm for I think it was a year, and we had like concrete walls, so we couldn't really pin things to the walls. So I remember us buying records and just putting duct tape on the back of them and like slapping them up against the concrete on the walls. So at least you've got, you're taking a more classy approach here by at least framing these things and putting them up on your walls.
Exactly. And they're starting to look pretty nice, but yeah, we got to find a way to shadow box the thicker ones because they're sort of like the centerpieces. And it's very cool to have them as well because no one's watching them. No one's really doing anything with them. They're just kind of like ending up on eBay. And if I can give them a home and display them and, you know, also have something very cool that I think really speaks to both my wife and I's taste in movies, then I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very cool. All right. So let's get into what we've been reading. I read a novel called Recursion by Blake Crouch, who is the same author that wrote a book called Dark Matter that I talked about not too long ago on the show. First of all, have you read either of those books, BJ?
No, I've not. I love when we have these conversations because I get to add things to my reading list.
So Dark Matter is this multiversal story that is at least partially about the paths not taken in life, and it engages with how the consequences of our decisions shape who we become and what our lives look like. And Recursion deals with similar themes, but in a different way. This book takes place in a world where there's a mysterious affliction that affects some people called false memory syndrome, where they're suddenly flooded with memories of lives they never actually lived. And the memories live side by side in their head with their real life. So it's almost like two timelines happening in their head at the same time. And some of the characters can't deal with the implications of that. So they end up taking their own lives. And it's about a detective in the year 2018 who experiences this phenomenon and tries to investigate it, like what it is and why it's happening. And it also takes place in the early aughts and follows this neuroscientist named Helena, who is inadvertently responsible for creating false memory syndrome. And it's about how those two characters' storylines intersect across time as some incredibly powerful technology ends up falling into the wrong hands. And I really enjoyed reading Dark Matter, but there are a couple little hangups that I had with Blake Crouch's writing that have been completely excised by the time he got around to publishing Recursion, which came out a few years later. And that, combined with the fact that this book continually levels up in fascinating and often jaw-dropping ways, means that I ultimately like Recursion even more than I did Dark Matter. So very, very high recommendation if you like sci-fi novels to check out this book called Recursion.
Yeah, this sounds like my nightmare, so I'm very excited to add this to my reading list.
There are, especially in the climax of the book, there are scenes and images and, yeah, just really vivid moments that I think are seared into my brain for a long, long time. So, yeah, this one's going to stick with me for sure.
I'm so fascinated by this because, like, I think I've talked about it on the show. If not, I have aphantasia, which means I don't have a mind's eye. So, like, if you close your eyes and, like, visualize something, I, like, cannot do that. I'm physically incapable of doing that. And so all of the memories that I have are not visual. They are descriptive of, like, I remember, you know, it was on this day and the weather felt like this, but it's all descriptive, like, as if I'm describing it with words, not visual. So I question my memories all the time of, like, is this how it actually happened? Or is this just the story I told myself to remember this is how it happened? Because I can never be sure. So having, like, false memory syndrome, yeah, I would absolutely be one of those people who would be like, and I'm out. Bye. Yeah. I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah, it's pretty gnarly. Okay, so what have you been reading, BJ?
Okay, so something that folks listening might not know about me is that outside of Slash Film, I am something called a sensitivity reader. And what that means is sometimes it's with books, sometimes it's with screenplays. Most frequently it's with screenplays, but writers, sometimes studios will send me a script and they'll say, hey, we're looking for a sensitivity read on this. I tend to read them for either LGBTQIA plus representation or stories about, like, fat people or women who are dealing with, you know, uncomfortable situations. Let's just put it in those common terms. And so I then give feedback and I'll say, like, hey, this is problematic. I joke sometimes that being a sensitivity reader is like being a think piece prevention specialist. Being like, hey guys, you should change this. Otherwise you will get a think piece written about you. And so I've been reading a bunch of scripts lately, all of which I have signed, you know, NDAs on, so I can't say what they are or what they're about. But I wanted to bring it up because there is something so fascinating about reading scripts, especially when I read a lot of scripts from a lot of different writers. And, you know, there's a lot of people, I think, online who like to give, you know, screenplay or screenwriting tips. And, you know, these are the tips you need to do. And the thing that I've learned the more I do this is that there really isn't one right way to write a script. Like, yeah, you should not have spelling errors, and there are, like, certain formatting things that you should probably follow. But all of these, like, rules that have been perpetuated between, like, screenwriting books or screenwriting Twitter or whatever you want to call it, it's everyone's kind of all making shit up as they go along, honestly. because I have read some scripts that give you, like, next to no description of, like, what the world looks like, and it's all character driven. And then ones that give me, like, this beautiful, lush descriptions that sound like something straight out of, like, a fantasy novel. And both movies are getting made. you know? So like it also kind of doesn't matter. But I love reading scripts, and it has given me such a larger appreciation for film in general, because it really does all start on the page. And I love going back and reading scripts of movies that I love and get a real script, not like some transcript that somebody has done from a movie. Like, buy the actual script if it's available, read the way that the screenwriter wanted scene descriptions to go, and you'll see just how much everything is rooted in that script. Like, it's just great. I love it.
That's very cool. I've only read, I don't know, probably 10 screenplays in my life or something like that. So this, it's just kind of a, well, especially where I am now in Florida, they're a little bit more difficult to find in secondhand bookstores and things like that. When I was in LA, they're all over the place. So I didn't really have much of an excuse when I was there. But yeah, I would also second that recommendation. It's just a fascinating thing to compare, especially because a lot of screenwriters will say, like, the flowery descriptions that you're talking about, they will purposely go out of their way to not do that stuff because they look at the script as just a document to sell the idea of the story, not necessarily a true blueprint for exactly what has to happen on the day. So of filming, you know, during actual production. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting to look at, yeah, like you said, different people's approaches to how they handle that stuff. And yeah, knowing that there is no one correct way to do things, I think is a great point to underline for people who are younger listeners, maybe, who are interested in breaking into the business and doing all that stuff. Like, obviously people would want to do as much research as they can to find the proper way to do things. But I think what you're trying to say is, like, there really isn't a true proper way.
I mean, you obviously have to know the rules in order to break them, but that's true with any industry. But I also highly recommend people read the screenplays of movies that you don't think about as being strong for their story, or, like, you know, the one that I always recommend is the screenplay for John Carpenter's The Thing, because everybody thinks about The Thing and they think about the effects and all of that, but the script is so good and it is so rich. And those are things that you don't think about because you're so dazzled by, like, you know, spider heads and exploding chests and all these sorts of things, mm-hmm. that you forget that the reason that all of that works as well as it does and is so impressive is because it's also anchored by one of the best stories ever written.
Awesome. Okay, so let's get into what we've been watching now. BJ, you've been watching a bunch of stuff. Tell me about that.
Oh, I've been watching so many things. I narrowed it down to three that I really wanted to talk about. The first one is, this was a rewatch, but it's a movie that I haven't watched since college, but I watched 1968's Pretty Poison.
I've never heard of this. What is this?
All right. So Pretty Poison is a black comedy, and it stars Anthony Perkins and Tuesday Weld. Anthony Perkins is, like, this ex-convict guy, and he becomes absolutely fascinated with this, like, beautiful blonde, like, she's like a flag drum major in a high school marching band. So it is a problematic age gap relationship sort of situation. But Anthony Perkins is on parole from a mental institution. He immediately falls in love with this high school girl. He convinces her that, like, he's a secret agent and, like, you need to come with me and go on these missions. But slowly but surely, you realize that not only does Tuesday Weld match his freak, but she goes above and beyond, and she's actually the more dangerous presence. And he realizes very quickly that he is not in control of the situation. He is not the person in power with this, and he's about to get bested by a high school girl. And it's incredible. Like, it is such a twisted movie. The performances by both Annie Perkins and Tuesday Weld are just incredible. It's a bit of a cult film, but rewatching it, I was like, yeah, this movie, it fucks. Like, this movie's so good.
Okay, yeah, this is awesome, because I've never heard of this in my life. 1968, wow. Okay, so I was looking to see if it was streaming anywhere, and you can rent it for whatever, $4 or something on Apple and Amazon right now. Do you own this, BJ?
No, so this is one of the many perks of my wife working at a movie theater that doubles as a video store, Vidiots in Los Angeles. She gets free rentals. So she has a tendency to just like find something that she's like, this has an interesting box art. I've never heard of this. And then just bring it home because Vidiots has a huge collection of cult films and weird independent video artists. And so she brought this one home. And I was like, God, I haven't watched this in like probably 17 years. I don't know. And sat down, rewatched it. And I was like, nope, it's better than I remember. This movie rules.
Awesome. Okay. So that's called Pretty Poison. What else have you been watching?
I recently did a full series rewatch of As Told by Ginger. This was a Nickelodeon coming of age animated series that came out in the year 2000. It has a very strange release in that the first two seasons, it went on, you know, like normal. And then the third season around 2004, things get really weird. Like a handful of episodes were released in 2004. Some of them were released around that same time, but only on DVD and VHS. Some of the episodes never were released until like 2016. So weird. Like they just like locked them away. Some of the ones that ended up on VHS didn't end up streaming until Paramount Plus existed. So I did this full series rewatch, and it was created by Emily Kapnick. And for those that are unfamiliar with the show, it is about a junior high student, later a high school student named Ginger Foutley, who it's just a day in the life kind of thing. Like she's going through the trials and tribulations of junior high and high school, dealing with issues with friends, dealing with issues with your sense of self, you know, of pretty typical coming of age story. However, it's an animated show where not only do all of the characters change their clothes every single day the way that they would if they were at school, but they also like physically grow. Like you watch the characters get taller, their hair changes, some of them gain weight, some of them lose weight, some of them mature and their facial structure changes. So it's an animated show that does grow the same way that a live action show would. And it's also so incredibly well written, and all of the voice cast is just a banger, like absolutely on fire. And during this rewatch, I was recognizing how important this series was to me as a storyteller and also establishing like a lot of my sense of self. And I at the same time was also very, very sad because I don't think there is a show that exists like this for kids today that handles things with maturity, that doesn't sugarcoat things. Like there's like a one-off episode where the kids are learning about the Donner Party at school, and like that's on a Nickelodeon show of them being like, yeah, I gotta read this book about the Donner Party, I think they ate people, I don't know. And you're like, that's wild for like a show for preteens that they are admitting the Donner Party were cannibals. But it's, oh my god, it's so good. Like this is without a doubt one of the best animated shows ever made, and it completely got slept on, and it's such a bummer. There are a couple of episodes that were nominated for Emmys and it lost to like The Simpsons every time, and rewatching it I'm like, there is no way in hell that The Simpsons should have beat these episodes.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. This show totally missed me. I think I was like just maybe like a couple years too old because I watched a lot of Nickelodeon when I was a kid. And I think I must have aged out just in time to completely miss the show. I'd never heard of it before. But As Told by Ginger is the name of the show. And it sounds, yeah, sounds like a great experience. So,
yeah. Oh, God. It's so good. It's also, and I will say, so this is, it comes out of Klasky Csupo, the animation studio that also produced things like Rugrats and The Wild Thornberries and Rocket Power. They're kind of known for their very specific animation style that a lot of people think is ugly, which I don't disagree with. I think sometimes the shows can look a little ugly, but you, once you get like caught up with these characters and fall in love with them, like you completely become endeared to the animation style. Like the mom is voiced by Lorraine Newman, as in like one of the original Saturday Night Live cast members and mother of Hannah Einbinder from Hacks. She voices the mom, and it is probably like my favorite like sitcom mom character. Oh my god, she's so good. It's just great. It's great. And then there's also, you know, voiceover legends like Tress MacNeille and Cree Summer and Kath Soucie, Gray DeLeal, like they're all on it as well. So you'll hear like Tom Kenny has like a character towards the later season. So like there are people that you'll go, oh, I recognize that voice too. But yeah, great, great show.
Okay, As Told by Ginger, streaming on Paramount Plus. We're going to check that out. And then what's the last thing you wanted to mention, BJ?
The last thing, this was a holy experience I had. Vidiots did a 35th anniversary screening of Heathers. And not only was it amazing to see Heathers on screen, a movie that I love so, so much, but director Michael Lehman, writer Daniel Waters, and the last living Heather, Lisa Ann Falk, were all in attendance and did a Q&A afterwards. And did I cry? Yes. Yes, I did. Yes, I cried. That's not a real question. It was so awesome to see the movie. I was seated next to teenagers who had never seen Heathers, but were familiar with the Heathers musical, which I thought was very interesting. And they were really into it. Like, they loved it. And, you know, when Christian Slater pulls a gun his first day of school, and they're like, they're not going to expel him. It wasn't a real gun. They were like, what? Which was, you know, the world has changed. But really, it was the Q&A that really got me, and learning that all of them had, you know, the most fun on set, that Winona Ryder took her role as Veronica Sawyer very, very seriously, that she understood it from jump. But what the thing that I'm like going to take with me forever is that Daniel Waters, who wrote this, which a lot of people also don't know this, but Daniel Waters, who wrote Heathers, is the older brother of Mark Waters. And Mark Waters directed Freaky Friday 2003 and Mean Girls. So the Waters brothers are responsible for three of the most important teen girl movies ever made.
Wow.
Which is nuts. But Daniel Waters was talking about the dialogue in Heathers, which has, you know, such iconic lines like, you know, fuck me gently with a chainsaw, how very, like, all of these things that, like, they don't sound like how people actually talk. It's very Diablo Cody in that regard. But he explained the dialogue by saying, like, yeah, nobody talks this way because I call it staircase text, or like staircase communication, which is that when you're talking to somebody and you're like in a fight or whatever, you never think of the smartest thing or the coolest thing to say in that moment. You think of it after you've left and you're walking down the staircase and you go, ah, I should have said that. And this is a movie where everybody always says what they should have said. And like, hearing the descriptor, I was like, oh, this makes so much sense. He also talked about how the movie is very much inspired by the filmography of Stanley Kubrick. Like, the cafeteria scene is like Full Metal Jacket. The whole tone of this was supposed to feel like Dr. Strangelove for teenagers. He actually pushed for Stanley Kubrick to direct this at first, which thank God did not happen. But like, once he identified those points and watching it, I'm like, oh no, I see it. I see what you were doing here. That's fascinating.
BJ, I have to admit that I saw Heathers one time, probably about 15 years ago now, and I just like didn't get it. I don't know. I was,
oh my
not,
God, you gotta revisit it.
Yeah, I think I do, because people speak so highly of it that I'm sure this is a case where, you know, it's kind of on me. And like, to be fair, I also didn't get, I'm trying to think, like The Princess Bride was one that where I watched it one time and I was like, I don't know about this. And then on subsequent viewings, I like fell in love with it. And now it's one of my favorite movies ever. And I remember feeling similarly about Anchorman the first time I saw it, like, because that came out in the same summer as Dodgeball.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I remember thinking like, oh my God, like Dodgeball blows Anchorman out of the water. But now with the long arm of time, I've watched Anchorman so many more times than Dodgeball. So yeah, this is probably going to be, I'm guessing if all goes well, this will be another one of those scenarios where I just kind of like, I don't know what happened the first time I saw it, but I don't know what I was expecting. And it was just so stylized that I was like, my mind was short circuiting. Like, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I couldn't even really like engage with the movie because it was so far away from what my expectations of it were. So now, even with all these years in between, I remember that feeling that I got watching it the first time. So now if I get around to rewatching it, I'll at least have a better sense of what I'm walking into.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's something else that'll happen, which I think happens a lot, is movies like Heathers are a lot like listening to the Beatles, in that you hear it and you're like, this is really good, but maybe I don't understand what's so cool about it, because literally everything has pulled from it moving forward. Like, there are so many things that have pulled from Heathers that people don't even realize are pulling from Heathers, which I think is just, that's the power of teen girl movies, baby. Teen girls, they are in charge of what becomes cool and popular. And that's its own entirely separate conversation. But you can draw back everything, because if it's not what teen girls are deciding is popular. It is people kicking back and trying to do the opposite of what teen girls think are popular. Like, the, again, I have a teen girl movie podcast called This Ends at Prom. You can hear me wax poetic on this for 200 plus hours elsewhere. But yeah, Heathers is so funny. And there are so many movies and so many styles of movies that we do not get unless that movie exists.
Excellent. All right, let's take a break and then we'll be right back.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so I just wanted to mention a few things. Really quickly, I watched the first few episodes of The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, Season 2, which is now up on Amazon Prime Video. The first three episodes are up right now. I think there's going to be 8 in this season. And I'm probably going to talk about this more on an upcoming episode, but I just wanted to put it on people's radar in case you haven't gotten around to checking out that show yet. I really, really love it. As somebody who is like all in on Peter Jackson's original Lord of the Rings trilogy, I love those movies. Those are some of my favorite movies ever. And I know that there was sort of a mixed reception to season one of Rings of Power, but I really liked that season. And I think there are aspects of this season that I like even more. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. Basically, I just wanted to put it on people's radar. Is this a show that you've dipped in on at all, BJ? Are you interested in this at all?
I'm going to be real. I got about halfway through season one and went, I don't have the time and I'm not nearly as invested, but I'm so glad this exists for all of like the diehard Lord of the Rings fans. That just that's just not my ministry and it never has been.
Not my ministry. I like that as a phrase. I've never heard that.
I heard that once on TikTok. I don't know who originally said it, but I was like, oh, so yoink, putting that in my back pocket forever.
Okay, so speaking of TV, I also watched the first two episodes of Only Murders in the Building, Season 4. Brad talked about that on a recent episode of the show. I'm just going to agree with everything that he said. I love the season so far. It's only two episodes in, but it really does feel like the most personal season yet, which is something that he mentioned. And I think that makes the show feel weightier than it has in the past. And I love the sort of frothy nature of the show when it's not operating in that sort of weighty mode. But I think this is a good pivot for the show after a season that was like only okay, I thought, with season 3. So Only Murders in the Building, the first two episodes of season 4 are up on Hulu right now, if you want to check those out and catch up with the show. And then the one that I wanted to talk to you about, BJ, is Mamma Mia. I watched Mamma Mia for the first time.
Yes!
So I was not at a place in my life in 2008 when this came out where I was ready to embrace sweeping romantic musicals as part of my cinematic diet, but I definitely am now. So I decided to check this out. I get why people dig this movie. They filmed a lot of it in Greece. The setting is gorgeous. There are lots of scenes of seemingly everyone in this little island community where this story takes place bursting into song and dance at the same time. So I thought there was kind of an aspirational quality almost to engaging with your neighbors in such a heightened, fun way. So I totally get why people love this. I have to admit, this movie is maybe a little too cheesy, even for me. I thought the ending was truly, truly ridiculous. And that wasn't a deal breaker for me, because something like Guys and Dolls is another bombastic musical that has a bonkers ending. And that didn't really ruin the movie for me. But the difference is that I didn't really connect to the music in Mamma Mia because I don't have a relationship to ABBA's catalog of songs. That was just never a band that I grew up really listening to. I know Dancing Queen because it was on the radio and like maybe one other song or something. So I wonder if that has something to do with why I didn't come away from this experience really loving this movie. Also, I have to say that Pierce Brosnan the man is a snack. He looks incredible, but he cannot carry a tune to save his life. And I know I'm not the first person to say that. So those are my sort of gut reaction thoughts to a first viewing of Mamma Mia. What do you think about this movie, BJ? Is this one that was like in your rotation? Do you love this film? What do you think?
So here's the thing. I love Mamma Mia because it is cornball central, and I love movies like that. I think that sometimes it's just nice to watch cheese, and this is very much that. However, there is a deeply rooted sincerity to the cheese of Mamma Mia, which is why I much prefer Mamma Mia Here We Go Again, which is very cheesy, but knows how cheesy it is and is like, no, we're just going to blow it out the water. Like, we're not even just jumping the shark. We are riding the shark, and we're going to have so much fun with it. I do prefer Mamma Mia Here We Go Again, which I do think is the significantly better film because I think it has a better sense of identity. But no, I love both of these movies. I do love ABBA, like, quite a bit. ABBA was, like, a big dance thing that I loved as a kid, so getting to see a jukebox musical like this I think is great. And I'm never going to be upset watching Christine Baranski and Meryl Streep and Amanda Seyfried. Like, it's just not going to happen. I love them. So yeah, I have a lot of fun with these. I get why it's not for everybody, and I don't expect it to be for everybody. Because yeah, it's silly. It's like, it's so silly. These movies are so, so silly.
I do plan on watching the sequel. I want to ask you one thing about that.
Cher.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I don't even think I realized that. I wanted to ask you about the music in the sequel. Like, are there the same songs as the first movie? Is it also just ABBA stuff? And if so, does it feel like the more of like a deep cut kind of thing with ABBA songs in the sequel that maybe didn't make it into the original? Like, how does the music work in the second movie?
So there is a couple more like deep cuts that people would not, you know, probably be as familiar with. There are some repeat songs, but they're presented in like different ways. So that's, I think, very fun. But yeah, it's very cool. Like, it's just very cool. It makes me very happy. I just, yeah, I like all of these songs. I like all of the people in it. So that's gonna always be something for me.
All right. Well, I will try to report back when my wife and I watch Mamma Mia Here We Go Again, which both of these movies I think are streaming on Max right now, if people are interested in diving in. All right. A couple more categories here. Let's get into what we've been eating. What have you been eating, Beezer?
All right. So as is the case with any time I come on the water cooler, I'm currently working through coming up with some sort of like definitive answer for a question that no one's ever asked. And the question this time around is, what is the best flavor of Maruchan instant lunch, aka like, you know, cup noodles as people know them? And I have been trying a bunch of them, and I've decided it's roast chicken. Roast chicken is the best flavor. I do like the spicy ones. I think those are cool. They have like a chili lime one. Those are fun. The beef is fine. I will say the caveat, I can't eat any of the fish ones. Like, there's like shrimp ones because I'm deathly allergic to fish. Roast chicken's the best one. It's the one where I don't taste the sodium quite as much because the flavoring is in there. And it is exactly what I expect it to be. I wish the spicy ones were a little spicier. The chicken one is a little too blasé now that I've had roast chicken. So yeah, that is my definitive, irrefutable, absolutely correct answer.
So how much of this is a nostalgia thing? Like, did you grow up eating this, or is this only something that you've gotten into as an adult?
I grew up poor, so this is definitely something that I'm very used to eating. But recently, they did an event that had people eating like cup noodles of ramen. And so my wife came home and she was like, I just have a pallet of ramen now because we have leftovers. And I was like, sick, this is awesome. So I've just been eating a bunch of them. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to make sure that I've had every flavor. And so I did that over the last like month.
That's awesome. Yeah, I never really had the instant noodles thing. I had a lot of Campbell's chunky soup, which that was like what got me through college. It was like a dollar a can at Publix or something, like, for, you could get like, yeah, 10 for $10 or something like that. So I just went through a lot of those. And now I'm to the point where I had so much of it that I just can't even really look at a can anymore. So I was wondering if this was one of those things where, like, do you have any of those things, those types of foods in your life where you ate so much of it as a kid that now you can't even stand it?
I can't do canned vegetables. Like, I just cannot do it because I can taste the aluminum and it, no, I'll eat frozen vegetables all day, but canned vegetables, I'm like, oh, I can't do this. I can't do it anymore. I'm an adult now. But I will still eat SpaghettiOs out of the can when I'm really feeling frisky, just straight out of the can, because I used to do that a lot when, you know, poor. Sometimes you don't have the ability to microwave it, so you just kind of deal with it and hope for the best.
There you go. All right, so let's get into the final category here. What you've been playing? What have you been playing recently?
All right, I am not like an app girly. I don't play a lot of games on my phone. So when children ask me if I got games on my phone, they are sorely disappointed. But the thing that I do play a lot of is the Impulse Brain Trainer app. It is an app that has, you know, puzzle games, which are cool. Like, oh, there's, you know, five rings on this stack and you need to get it to the other stacks, but you can't have the bigger ones on top of the smaller ones. So, you know, puzzle games like that. There's also ones that are quick math games. There's also ones where it's like, hey, if I folded up this piece of paper into like a six-sided die, what would the die faces look like? Like, what would be the order of it? And it's been helping me a lot. Again, something I'm not sure I've talked about on the show, but like I have brain damage from my cancer treatment and taking a little bit too much radiation to the head. And so I do a lot of brain teasers to kind of keep myself active, keep my brain from, you know, getting lazy. And this app has been really great for me. And it also tracks your progress. And so then I get like my little serotonin boost when it's like, congratulations on your 10-day streak. And I'm like, oh, you're welcome. Thank you for remembering. So yeah, I've been playing a lot of Impulse Brain Trainer. And it is a free app, but you can also pay for it. I'm one of those filthy heathens that do pay for it because I get so annoyed with ads after a certain point that I just like, I don't care. Take my $5. Just leave me alone. But
okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah, I've never heard of this. Impulse Brain Trainer. All right, I'll try to put a link to that in the show notes so people can check that out. All right, before we end here, I wanted to read a listener email that we got about the ending of the movie Blink Twice, Zoe Kravitz's directorial debut. You and I talked about this movie not too long ago on the show, but we're going to get into some specifics of what happens at the end of the film. So if you've not seen the movie and don't want to know, turn off the podcast now. But Jennifer from San Antonio wrote in this email to us. So she says, "Dear Ben and BJ, at first, I just wanted to say how much I enjoy the show. I've been listening for a couple years now and always enjoy your commentary as well as the other members of Slash Film, particularly BJ Colangelo. In fact, my teenage daughter and I went to see the film Blink Twice based on your enthusiastic review. After listening to the episode reviewing Blink Twice, as well as hearing BJ discuss the film on the Filmcast podcast, in addition to reading your article about the ending of the movie, I had to write in. My daughter and I are both big horror movie fans and really love the film, so thank you again for the recommendation. However, I was fascinated when we walked out of the movie, as she saw the ending very differently than I did. When the camera shows Frida, and this has been interrupting here to say that Frida is
Naomi Aki.
Yes, Naomi Aki's character. Thank you. Talking to Sarah, who is Adria Arjona's character, outside in the grass, looking at the burning house, and then slowly pans over to Slater King. That's Channing Tatum. As Sarah says, do you wish you had made a different choice? My daughter Violet read that as Frida deciding to save Slater King rather than saving Frida, but obviously having mixed feelings about that terrible choice, which she would have had to make quickly while the house was burning down. So I guess she read it as a much darker ending, with Frida abandoning the sisterhood, saving King, and then subjugating him and taking over his empire, but obviously having a little bit of conflicted feelings and guilt that she should have saved Sarah instead. Hence, briefly hallucinating a conversation with Sarah, calmly questioning the choice that she made, reflecting Frida's conscience. She had this darker take, which I thought was indicated by seeds laid earlier in the movie, such as Frida not believing and respecting her friend Jess's worry that things are not right and when she just wants to leave the island. So I just thought this was an interesting read on the ending that I've not seen discussed elsewhere. Again, I love the show and keep doing great work on the website as well. So thanks for writing in, Jennifer. This is kind of a mind-blowing thing to me. I was wondering if you had the same reading, BJ, because this was like a totally fresh interpretation that I just did not consider at all.
Yeah, this was definitely not my initial like reaction to it, but as I'm hearing it, oh, I totally see it. And I think that that's fascinating. And again, why I like Blink Twice so much is because you can watch this movie and have multiple different takes on what you think it means, and the movie isn't going to spoon feed you an easy answer. And I love that. So I think that, you know, both of these reads can exist at the same time. I don't think that one is definitively correct and one is definitively not. I think that that's, again, goes to the narrative power that Zoe Kravitz has, of that she did leave these breadcrumbs in order for like this read to make sense. And she left another trail of breadcrumbs that have, you know, the way that we interpret it it to make sense. And that's awesome. Like, that's very cool. That's what makes this movie so exciting. So yeah, kudos to your daughter for finding the bleaker, darker read. I love it.
Yeah, I was trying to, I've only seen the movie once, but I was trying to think back to the very end of the movie and really like lock those images in my brain. And I don't remember seeing the Sarah character at the fancy sort of function where Frida basically, where it's revealed that Frida has taken over King Tech or King Industries or whatever the name of that company is, right? So I think the last time we see Sarah in the movie is in that moment right outside of the burning building. And yeah, it seems like she definitely could be some sort of projection or a hallucination from Frida's perspective. Yeah, super bleak read on the ending, especially given like how close those two characters seemed to become after they were like forged together through this trauma that they experienced. What that does to the Frida character and like the ruthlessness that that might show for like what she's willing to do in order to gain power is pretty extreme. But yeah, I'm very curious to go back and watch the movie again to see if that reading makes more sense to me now that I know that it exists and that people, or at least one person, thinks that that could be, you know, what happened in this movie. So yeah, anyway, I appreciate Jennifer, you writing in, and shout out to Violet as well for that, yeah, wild read at the end of the movie. So
yeah, I want to go rewatch it now with that in mind and like see if it changes my feelings. That's such a great read.
Yeah, cool stuff. All right, so you can find more about most of the things that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a few things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.